that we've been doing in January to start off the year on abundant life. And we've been in the Gospel of John for all four stories. First of all, with the wedding at Cana. In John chapter 2, we learned that the best is yet to come. When Jesus got out the wine, the best wine, at the end of the wedding feast. Those of us that are in the second half of life, most of us here, can identify with Nicodemus. Our second story. He was somebody who studied, was in a position of authority, yet perhaps he was missing something. And he came to Jesus at night. And we talked about why settle for again when Jesus said to be born again when you can be born from above. And we played on the translation of words. Wouldn't we want something new and not something we've already had? So why not be born from above? And then the woman at the well from John chapter 4. We learn that Jesus is waiting there for us to have a conversation. It might be an uncomfortable conversation. Jesus wants us to sit down. And there Jesus will reveal our best self. There'll be some cracks in it. Jesus will hold up a mirror to us and change us and unlock our potential. Take away shame. Just as he did for the woman who was made new. She became evangelist for her entire town. And now we have the fourth story, Lazarus, in the 11th chapter. It is dramatic. It's one of my favorite stories in all the Bible. It's well written. It's got a lot of buildup. There's tension. There's backstory. There's personal relationships. Mary and Martha, Jesus, they were friends. It's a lot of emotion. Even Jesus shares his emotion, lets it show. When I was thinking about this story and reflecting on it this week, I thought how the miracle itself and Jesus himself, as great as it is, kind of overshadows some things that are going on in its secondary characters. There are certain steps of discipleship along the way for each person that's in the story. Certain markers of faith that have been overshadowed by this dramatic raising of the dead of Lazarus. First of all, there's Thomas. Thomas, yeah, he's in the story. He's in the beginning. He's like a footnote. He's the same guy that we call Doubting Thomas. It's a shame that he's known by his worst story because here he shows great faith. He says we should go to Jerusalem and just die with him. Person of great faith. As opposed to Peter, when Jesus said something about going to his death, Peter said, oh no, not you, Lord. Say it ain't so. And Jesus said, step behind me, Satan. Here, Thomas takes a step of courage. Let's go, a step of faith. Let's go to Jerusalem, a step of conviction, foreshadowing what Jesus would say at the Last Supper in the Gospel of John, that there is no greater love than giving up your life for a friend. But that had not happened yet. That's in chapter 15. This is in chapter 11. So Thomas must have picked up on something along the way, traveling with Jesus. How about us? Are we willing to take that same step, that Thomas step, to go somewhere where we might face danger, scorn, ridicule, bodily harm, maybe even death? Probably not. This week, I heard stories from refugees living in this country from Sudan and Syria. These are places where today, right now, it's dangerous to be a Christian. And they fled. They were beaten. They were imprisoned. They had to flee for their lives. This is the kind of thing that Jesus and his disciples faced by going towards Jerusalem, where they knew that they were people gunning for them. This week, I'm going to the desert. I don't know what I'll face. I doubt it will be bodily harm, but it could be interesting. Searching for desperate people along the border, helping them, giving them aid. I don't know what I'll face in Mexico. Are we willing to do those kinds of things? Even when people question you, say, it's crazy to go back there. Don't go back to Jerusalem. Are you crazy? There's people that want to kill you there. Jesus was not afraid, and Thomas was right there with him. A step. How about the steps that the neighborly people are making in Bethany, comforting Mary and Martha for 4 days? 4 days Lazarus was in the tomb. In ancient days, they had a different sense of community, and I'm not putting us down, but today, unfortunately, a lot of times in the world and culture, we ignore people who are mourning. We don't want to be around people who are sad and mourning. It puts us in a bad mood. It upsets us when other people around us are upset. Many of us have an aversion to funerals. I know many people who won't go to a funeral. They won't go to a nursing home. They don't want to see people who are sick or in pain. It might bring back memories for some people, someone close to them, and that's understandable. Yet they were there comforting Mary and Martha. Many of us might bring casseroles, check in on them, go shopping. How many of us would be there for 4 days just sitting with them, just being there? I learned this week in one of my sessions the value of just being there for the journey for somebody in pain, in suffering, somebody that's mourning, just saying, I'm going to hold your hope. Somebody that is so down in the dumps that they don't see any hope at all at the end of the tunnel. You can be hope for them just by being there, by saying, I will carry your hope. I will carry a sense of joy for you when you cannot. Mary and Martha were in need. They were unmarried, single women in a time when, unfortunately, women depended on men to take care of them, a male family member to take care of them, anybody. Steps that the people of Bethany took of discipleship. How about the steps that Martha takes? Martha. This is someone also maligned like Thomas because of her worst story in the gospel. You know that in that other gospel in Luke, the one who was busy working to listen to Jesus. She was in the kitchen or whatever, tending, cleaning up, while Mary, as it says right there in Scripture, chose the better portion. Here's Martha. Martha makes the greatest statement by any follower of Jesus pre-Pentecost. And I will stand by that. Not Peter or James or John would say these words. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. She believed that Jesus had the power to keep Lazarus from dying. She goes on, but I know that God will give you whatever you ask. She believes that Jesus is God's son. And she's leaving room for the unexpected. Even though Lazarus is dead and in the grave, she's leaving room, perhaps, with the possibility that something can be done for her brother. She goes on, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. There were religious leaders, the Sadducees, who did not believe in the resurrection of the dead. She must have been listening from the kitchen. She must have picked up on something, just like Thomas did. She must have heard Jesus. And then, finally, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who is to come, not just here, to come into the world. Wow. It's Martha, Martha. This week I heard a Korean gospel singer, and it was unexpected what came out of her voice when she started. She got everyone's attention by singing, "I believe," from the middle of the sanctuary. And then the chorus joined in after her, and she said it again, "I believe," in a big gospel voice that got everyone's attention. And here is this little woman that looks meek. Martha, surprising in her statement. Are we ready to step out to make those steps, the Martha steps, to be a bold witness to the Lord of life, to point to Jesus and say, "Messiah, the one who is to come into the world"? Mary runs to Jesus, not just makes steps, runs to Jesus, falls at his feet, repeating what her sister said, "If you had only been here." Once again, a statement of faith. I imagine her to be overcome with so much emotion that she has trouble talking. Another bold discipleship moment. Would we be willing to fall at Jesus' feet when we are mourning someone's death? When we are mad at God? And Mary had right, a legitimate gripe with Jesus. Jesus intentionally waited to come to Bethany. "Why had you not been here, Jesus?" But those words don't come from her mouth. Why? How many of us would have asked why? Why? You could have prevented this. I think she's wondering that. I think she's saying that in her statement, "If you had only been there." Sometimes we are afraid to be honest with God, to voice our anguish, to be real. I learned this week of the importance of expressing lament. Lament. A great deal of the Psalms, a third of the Psalms, almost thereabouts, a third of the Psalms are lament Psalms. There's a whole book of the Bible called Lamentations, Laments. We think, in our modern minds, many of us think, the general consensus is out there, I've heard it, people have said it to me, that if we express doubt or our pain to God, that we are somehow not being a good Christian. But by not doing so, by not being honest with God, God knows what's in our hearts and minds. By not expressing it, we miss out on a transformational experience of really knowing God, of really knowing ourselves. Because what happens when Mary approaches Jesus? What does Jesus do? Jesus weeps. Weeps. Jesus wept. Folks, God cries when we cry. God feels pain when we feel pain. God is with us through the valley of the shadow of death. Psalm 23. So, are we ready to step out in Mary's way, to perhaps even challenge God, to ask God questions while at the same time worshiping God? Then there's this little thing of the guys rolling away the stone. I assume they're guys because it's physical work. Somehow, Jesus says, "Roll away the stones," and people do it. Now, it's Martha who questions him, saying, "Well, it's been too long. There's going to be an odor. It's been 4 days. It's going to be ugly, bad, embarrassing." I imagine these mystery men to be the people, perhaps, in every church that might typically say, "Well, quote, we've never done that. before. We've never done it this way before. Once someone's been dead for 4 days, you don't open the grave. Don't open that can of worms. Pardon my pun. Leave it closed. We don't want to deal with it. Jesus is not just bending rules, not just breaking them even, but changing them right in front of everyone's eyes. Jesus is going there, people. Jesus is going to open it up. Jesus isn't going to leave anything buried and sealed behind a cold stone door. Don't go there, we tell our leaders in churches. Leave it sealed. We don't want to deal with that particular issue. But there's nothing, nothing that Jesus left undone in his life and in his ministry. Nothing that was left unsaid. It is finished, he said on the cross. He's going to open the grave. He's going to go there. He wasn't afraid of those onlookers, those people that conspired against him. This might have been a death sentence to him. We should not be afraid to tackle those dead, dusty issues that we have at the church. And all churches have them. How about that step? To roll away the stone, expose it to open air. Are we ready to roll away the stones of our hearts? Roll it away. Let Jesus intervene in that relationship in your life. Let Jesus deal with that memory. Let Jesus deal with that pain that you have sealed up, that you would rather not even mention or think about. Are you ready? Are you ready to wake up? Wake up, dead man, like Bono says from U2. Wake up, step out of the tomb. One final step, the step of Lazarus. Answering the call of Jesus. Come out. Come out. Jesus is there. Jesus is calling us this morning. Come out of the dead places. Come out of your slumber. Jesus is waiting to tell you about the eternity and how it will be. Jesus says, step out, become unbound, be set free, step out, see the new abundant life that God has for you. Take that final Lazarus step. He could have stayed. He didn't. He stepped out. He stepped out. Let us step out in faith and be unbound and be set free.